Good morning. My name is Devin Ellis, and I am an analyst at the University of Maryland in the Department of Government there. And our designated stand-in to talk about what the red team, so to speak, is doing about wargaming. I promise you that the only group of people who read Deputy Secretary Work's memo more closely than the Connections Community of Practice was the General Staff Department of the PLA. And I have a tiny bit of a window into some of the thinking that is going on there in Beijing, and so that's what I've been asked to talk about. And this is a reiteration of a talk that I gave last summer at the U.S. Connection, so my apologies to those of you who've heard a lot of this before. I picked a cute title for my talk because, of course, everybody is mostly familiar with the game Go. It originated as a Chinese game called Wei Qi.
Devin, we can't hear you,
but
that's
you want to try unplugging those three mics?
Can you hear me now? All right, I'm going to stand closer to this. Why me? I've been working for the past 10 years as part of a bilateral U.S.-Chinese crisis management effort that has involved a number of war games in a continuous effort about annually, and we have learned a great deal from that process. I have also, because of that, been invited to be either the principal or designer or part of a team to design other bilateral and in a couple of instances, even trilateral efforts involving the PLA as well. And again, as a result of that, I have many relationships with people in the PLA who were kind enough to talk to me, not for attribution, about what they know about what goes on inside their own system. I'm not here to talk about the PLA's live exercises, the Chinese commercial gaming market, or the ground-up use of gaming for education in the Chinese PME system, although I'll just mention briefly why. I am here to talk principally about political military gaming at the strategic level and what we know about where that's being done in the PLA system and who the audience is and what some of the salient features are that I have experienced in working in political military crisis management games with the folks who are crossing between those two communities. This is the slide where I quote Peter. I believe it's obligatory in any Connections conference. An exercise is not a war game. The PLA has gotten very good at exercises. They are using exercises increasingly as a stand-in for the fact that they have not fought a modern war. And so they are aware of their need to close this deficit. There they are sailing off to a exercise in the South China Sea. I'm sorry, the East China Sea. There is a thriving commercial wargaming market in China. A lot of it is video gaming, and some video gaming that is connected in tandem to a whole literature of pulp novels, sort of choose-your-own-adventure pulp novels in which brave PLA officers alter the course of history by winning World War II single-handedly, conquering Japan, and doing other things like that. In this particular war game, which I believe is called Red Dawn, the still that you see here, if you get up close to the fallen Japanese officer, the game automatically prompts you to begin shooting its corpse. The PLA also says wargaming is important for the PME system. If you were here yesterday, I think in Tom's talk, he had a provocative little slide that said, why should you do it? Because your adversaries are doing it too, in which there was a story from about 5 years ago about the incorporation of wargaming into the curriculum in the PME system over in China. The question that is sort of still outstanding is, what does that actually mean? Just like in the United States, just because you say wargaming is important and everybody should be doing it, doesn't mean that what they're doing is what we would consider wargaming or that it's any good. And we're trying to figure out a little bit more about that through the opportunities that we have. I hope to hear from Tom after he takes a little jaunt in the near future to see at least one place in which some interest in wargaming is taking place in that system. And I would also plug an article by my colleague Dean Chung, who has written quite lucidly and extensively on the published evidence that we have with regard to the PLA's wargaming for cyber, in which they have actually written quite a bit in doctrine and allowed quite a bit to be published internally in Chinese media. So I'm happy to share that link with you again further, and of course I think the talk will be on the website. Okay, so let me now shift away from those three things and talk about what I am here to talk about, which is the Paul Mills side. The PLA is not as practiced in or open about what we call full-spectrum wargaming as we are here in the United States, or here in the UK, as it may be. They are actively trying to change that. There is a small literature in Chinese about what we would call pull mill wargaming, but it is mostly about what other people are doing about it or have done about it. There isn't really an available open source literature about what they're doing about it. As a consequence, Track 2 efforts like the ones I've been involved in are about as close as we get to seeing that type of wargaming effort on their side. I should note that the points of connection for Track 2 efforts like this are highly specialized to primarily the outfits that are connected either to their state security service or to the PLA intelligence service, and cross between those units and the PME system and between those units and what you would think of as traditional academia or think tanks in China. And, of course, like everything else in Beijing, these efforts are politically sensitive, and both who can be involved in them and what you can talk about changes depending on the year, the month, and what's going on both in international and domestic politics. I want to talk a little bit about some structural features of how PLA officers tend to approach wargaming and how then those have shifted in my view, over the last decade that I've been interacting with some of these folks. Most PLA games until very recently were almost purely kinetic. They were also mostly operational and not strategic. Talking about strategic level decision making in a way that is not in doctrine or in quoting the Little Red Book is a very difficult thing to do inside the PLA system, except at the most senior level. That, of course, contributes to creating an environment in which wargaming at the strategic level is difficult to do because you're putting yourself out there. It isn't, in the sense that we like to talk about it, a risk-free environment. There's political risk to what takes place in a wargame. Silos pervade. I like to use a little anecdote. A couple of years ago, I was talking to a former extremely senior official at the State Oceanic Administration, which, if you've followed any of the stuff that's been happening in the South China Sea or East China Sea over the last several years, the State Oceanic Administration sits on top of the new Chinese Coast Guard. And so they are the policy decision-making unit that is responsible for supervising all of the Whitehall vessels that have been bumping into and interacting with the Vietnamese, the Philippines, the Japanese in the case of the disputed islands in the East China Sea. And he told me that until the bilateral effort that we were carrying out 2 summers ago, he had never in the course of his entire career been involved in a PLA wargame or exercise. Last summer, in further confirmation of this, a very senior lawyer from the State Oceanic Administration described how the law indicated that if a crisis incident on the sea started as an interaction between the China Coast Guard and a foreign vessel, then the chain of command would continue to run through the China Coast Guard until they were told otherwise by higher authorities in Beijing. As soon as she said that, she was immediately contradicted by a very senior PLA general in the corner of the room who said that's completely untrue. The PLA Navy would be calling the shots from the word go if they were anywhere near the scene. And the legal chain of command through the Oceanic Administration wouldn't matter at all. Which one of them is right? I couldn't tell you. But that in and of itself tells you something about how the wargaming that takes place or doesn't take place in the Chinese system reflects some of the command, control, and doctrine issues that are still unclear to them, particularly when you begin to cross from the PLA into other parts of the national security apparatus, and that's important. By implication, the audience for most PLA gaming is purely inside the PLA. In the 10 years that we've been doing this one track two effort, we have never had official involvement from anyone in the foreign ministry, ever. Despite the fact that in every one of these games we have someone playing the foreign minister. Who red teams inside the PLA? And I'm using the word red team in the conventional way that we would use it in the US or the UK or any other NATO country, but if you have been at Connections in the US, you've heard Phil Parnell from the Office of Net Assessment talk about how he loves the fact that in Chinese war games, they are the red team. Of course, it's the Red Army, right? So they are going to be the red team, and the US is the blue team. So they don't change the colors, and that's fine with them. So what this slide really should say is, who blue teams? Who plays us in a PLA war game? And the answer to that is that in almost any pole mill situation, the experts who play the opposing group are going to be drawn from a comparatively small group of people who are professional academic or military academic studiers of those countries, mostly from one of two places, either the Academy of Military Sciences, which is sort of the senior most apex of the PLA PME and doctrine system, or the National Defense University. These people who play us also tend to be the people who are sent to interact with us. When you interact with senior Chinese leaders from their PME system, you see folks like these two generals who get to go on television, talk about what the PLA is doing, talk about what people the PLA are worried about or doing. General Zhu on the right here, very sort of infamously runs his mouth and gets to rattle the saber and then be forgiven for it. He was the individual who signaled threats about the Chinese possibly nuking Los Angeles during the 1995-96 Straits crisis. And he was also the individual who said that American foreign policy suffered from erectile dysfunction at a international conference in Singapore a couple of summers ago. So the reason I bring this up, and I should say that he is actually a very sober and friendly person one-on-one. The reason I bring this up is because their blue teaming suffers from all the same problems our red teaming suffers from, magnified. I've interacted with most of the people who would be called on to come play the United States in a relatively senior PLA pole mill game, and I'm frightened by some of the things they don't understand about U.S. military doctrine, for example, in a way that I'm sure they're very frightened about the things that I don't understand about political decision-making in China. Some of the behavioral features that have begun to evolve in amongst these folks in the last several years include this idea that's very important in sort of all parts of Chinese national security thinking, which and most Chinese politics in general, which is that philosophical principles are hard to get away from. If the senior leadership has said, for example, that there are three steps to making a decision about something, then you have to take those three steps, regardless. And you see that carried out in war games. So usually the first thing that you'll see when you get a Chinese team in a room to do a pall mall game is they'll sit down and they'll spend the first hour deciding what the principles are going to be for decision making, what the guiding principles are for understanding things like use of force and the strategy that underlies what they're doing. And that's very much in contrast to sort of, I think, if you got us all in a room. When I came in yesterday afternoon, a little late arriving, and the game was in progress, it happens like that. Doesn't happen like that with the Chinese rule. The single most salient thing that I have taken away from the last 10 years of doing this is that there is an absolute adherence in PLA gaming as well as in doctrine to not firing the first shot. Now, some of my colleagues in the U.S. would like, you know, tell me, well, yeah, that's what they're telling you when you're in the room with them. But I have to say it's very striking, and it doesn't matter who you mix into that group. It is, generally speaking, the only thing that doesn't have to be discussed or worked out in advance. We have encountered this sort of issue of what I call perspective-driven reality, or the application of moral or legal judgments to what can or cannot happen in a game. I have been told, for example, that it would be historically inappropriate for the United States to ask Japan to be involved in any kind of crisis on the Korean Peninsula, and therefore it shouldn't happen. Historically inappropriate, right? That sort of thinking limits creativity, and so it limits outputs. My caveat to that would be that that's also one of the first things that I think we're seeing change. As the PLA evolves their wargaming along with evolving their real life experience, they are beginning to incorporate the fact that the world does not always behave like it should on paper. And therefore, if you're going to get value out of gaming, you have to also allow people to behave not as they are supposed to on paper. And the last point on this slide is more of the same stuff, is selective interpretation or application of legal standards. And this is becoming more and more salient as the situation on the water becomes more and more salient to the PLA's interaction with other countries. What are the definitions under law of territorial waters, high seas, freedom of navigation, etc., etc.? This is really where it's at now. And I can tell you that 10 years ago, when we do these bilateral efforts, nobody ever brought a lawyer. And now, if there are four uniformed officers, there will also be three lawyers. There is a persistent high level of mistrust of U.S. intentions and other regional actors' intentions in a lot of the PLA interactions I've seen. I don't think that would be a shock to anybody. But probably more interestingly and more importantly, there is a real misunderstanding about how alliance relationships in the way that we do them in the Western world work. This tends to manifest itself in two ways. It's sort of a push-pull, a having your cake and eating it too, where there's frustration on the part of the Chinese that, for example, a NATO player or a U.S. player can't simply order an ally, like the South Koreans, to behave or do what they're supposed to do. But then on the other hand, when, for example, the U.S. says, well, please talk to Pyongyang and get them to be more cooperative, the Chinese pushback is, our alliances are very different from yours. We don't have structural features where we can actually talk to them or where we can, you know, get them to do something. It's just a polite communication and a request. We're friends. There are also persistent myths about particularly U.S. signaling through force posture, but that applies, I think, to any country that is, you know, using NATO doctrine. One of the biggest of these is that the location and position of an aircraft carrier says something about the strategic intent of the U.S. National Command Authority, and that how many miles away from something that aircraft carrier is, or how many aircraft carriers are moving in a direction at a time, is something that you can crystal ball, and that if you understand the matrix appropriately, you can infer the White House's intentions directly from how those aircraft carriers are moving. Over and over again, we've said this is not the case, but it really has some sticking power. And silos have an observable negative effect on the quality of participation. I mentioned the lack of ability to cross in the PLA into other domains, but it's also true intra-service. I've encountered a lot of instances in which it's very difficult for a PLA Army officer to play a PLA Navy officer, even in a game, because they just don't have knowledge about the operating concepts or the hardware, and vice versa. So again, what you see is in the games, the reality of the difficulty that the PLA has in coming into a joint operating posture as a modern military is reflected. Let's see. All right. I think I have just enough time to talk a little bit about this. The top bullet on this slide is probably changing as we speak. What I said at the beginning of the talk is, I think, very true. The last time I was in Beijing not too long ago, there were any number of references specifically to the Deputy Secretary's memo. So if the PLA thinks that the U.S. Defense Department is reinvigorating wargaming, then they are going to be trying to be reinvigorating wargaming as well. The third bullet point here is really, I think, a really important takeaway, though. I think that we have a tendency to mythologize the success that you can have in the Chinese system because of things like continuity of leadership giving you the ability to have a long planning cycle, right? Or top-down orders giving you the ability to compel change against political pressure or against monetary pressures. And I don't think that's really true. The Chinese system is fraught with difficulties in creating and changing institutions. And I think it's important that we not forget that. And that just because the PLA has decided that they're going to do something does not mean that tomorrow they're going to be better than everybody else at doing it. I think it's also worth noting that what you see happening right now in front of us with the political purge that's going on in China and how much it has begun to affect the PLA is really important. There's a lot of purging left to come. And as very senior military officers begin to be to fall victim to this process, where the emphasis and the attention lies inside the system for carrying out wargaming and indeed any other kind of doctrinal change is going to be in the balance. And then my last plug would be for us to remember that even the best war teaming, even the best red teaming in our war games leaves gaps, and that it's important that we try and continuously learn and understand how the PLA, and for that matter, any other group that we're interested in red teaming, actually thinks and acts, so that we continuously improve how we portray them as thinking and acting in our internal processes. And with that, I will just close by saying that for Peter and Stephen, I'm happy to weigh in on the fact that there is also a how do you spell wargaming issue in Chinese. And the war game people seem to be losing out to the war game people, and the war game people have chosen to use a two-character phrase in Chinese, bingqi, which literally means military chess. Thank you all very much.